Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, recording from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. He's going to be with you this evening.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah. All right, here we go going on the show tonight. Mike has some advice on some Pope style advice. Mike, can you give us the 3-cent version of the Pope style?
Crap, I had a perfect opportunity to come up with a better title than that. I didn't. But basically, the Pope style advice is giving up your life, so you may gain it. It might have a different meaning than you think.
What does it actually look like to give up your life, or what are you losing? That type
of
thing?
Exactly. Okay.
All right, so that'll be Mike's Pope-style advice. I was watching, I was looking online this week, and there was an article that said atheist teacher is under, what was it? Oh, yeah, under probe after calling students who invited her church cretins on Facebook. So there's some students who had invited her to church, and she called them cretins. Now, like, what is that, Mike, what is that insult intended to be?
A cretin?
Yeah. Like, what is that? What is that actually? I mean, is that wrong to ask? What does that actually mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I always assumed it was like a caveman type character. A dullard.
Cretin. A stupid person.
Yeah.
Medicine. Second option is medicine. A person who is deformed.
Well, that's too far, isn't it?
And mentally handicapped because of congenital thyroid deficiency. That's very specific.
Oh, so it's like a disease. Look up dullard.
Okay. Hold on. Let's see, dullard, a slow or stupid person.
Yeah, it's the same as, okay, good. I've been using that correctly then.
Synonym, simpleton, ignoramus, oaf, dunce, dolt.
No cretin, though.
No, hold on, dictionary.com. Maybe I don't want to know this. Wait, a person suffering from cretinism. Well, what's that?
I don't know. A thyroid deficiency.
A congenital disease due to absence or deficiency of normal thyroid secretion characterized by physical deformity, dwarfism, and mental retardation, and often by goiter.
Wait a minute. Isn't that why people take creatine? Is that the same? Is it tied in?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think that's the same.
Anti-dwarfism?
Thing. I don't know. Maybe. In either case, that's kind of a weird thing to say to somebody.
It's an astute name calling.
Hold on. A Florida public school district is investigating an atheist teacher who wrote disparaging remarks about her students on a Facebook page for local atheists, claiming the students harassed and teased her by inviting her to church. What?
Teased?
Billy won't leave. I didn't see that coming. Karen Tucker, a spokesman for Bay District Schools, said school policy doesn't allow teachers to criticize students either in person or on an internet page.
Well, that's half the problem of our society anyway.
And Human Resources is investigating. Susan Kramer is an atheist and teaches at Merritt Brown Middle School in Panama City. There's a bevy of boys in one of my classes who are taking turns either inviting me to their church or leaving anonymously flyers inviting me to church events. Sorry. Kramer wrote on the Atheists of Bay County's private Facebook page, "Today I found one on the AV cart I use for a podium." Now, it does sound like they're doing it on purpose to be a bunch of jerks, doesn't it?
No, agreed.
Yeah.
They may indeed be cretins.
I mean, here's the deal, though. If you're going to teach middle school, I mean, you got to have a spine for this type of thing, right?
I mean, do you remember middle school, right? It was a disaster as a student. I mean, I'd always assume after you got out of school, high school, that, like, you'd rise above this and then see it for what it is. And instead, you have jumped back in the pool and been offended.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I just, hey, man, they're leaving flyers.
Oh, no. I can't take flyers.
I mean, I have to put up that now. Like, a guy just puts flyers on my car. I'm like, it's not abuse. It's just, you know, his free speech sucks.
Yeah. He's been given a right, and he's wasting it.
Yeah, okay. She continued, "Every time any child sneezes, they loudly say, 'God bless you,' and look in my direction." I mean,
bold of a stance of an atheist has she taken? Right? Like, I don't have any idea if any of my teachers in high school were atheists.
No.
I have no idea.
That's true. They obviously know this and are, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you gave them too much information. They're middle schoolers. You can't do that type of thing.
Yeah,
everybody knows that.
I mean, this it's sad, but, like, the best way to survive middle school / high school is do what Paul says, be all things to all people, which on the opposite of that is be nothing to nobody.
Right.
Just kind of blend in with the wallpaper and get out.
Let's see. I've complained twice to my principal. They're saying God bless you after people sneeze and looking at me.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it just seems, I mean, here's the deal. It's like, I'm going to agree that they're being snots about the whole thing, but, I mean, grow a spine here. Don't be fazed by it. How weak is your non-faith?
That's true. How strong is your non, you know, I can't imagine the conversation with the principal. Look, they keep saying God bless you when I sneeze. Well, those bastards.
I will not be blessed.
What a group of hooligans. Maybe you should consider not being an atheist, and all this would go away.
Let's see. Yeah, I mean, this is ineffective on helping people know Jesus, but I'm just, like, ignore the fact that it's an atheist God thing.
In fact, as a PR move, right, this is the thing that us as Christ followers tend to worry about, is, like, the wrong guys are going to get up at the head of the table and start talking. You're like, No, they don't represent Jesus well. And the atheists have apparently the same problems, right? Like, according to this lady's example, when you become an atheist, you become a spineless yellow belly who's offended by all slings and arrows heading your direction.
Yeah, I mean, let's assume that I was a teacher in middle school, and I was a Jesus follower, and every time someone sneezed, they're like, Zeus will bless you, and then looked at me. I'm like, Zeus doesn't pass out blessings, so
Yeah. Don't
you look silly.
Yeah.
I mean,
you wait till my internet blog.
Hey, will you come to our Zeus fest? No, I don't think I'll be there. I don't believe in it. I mean, these all seem like basic things you could say. And they, you know, hey, this is the 10th time we left a flyer onto your desk and said, yeah, I burnt that stuff. Or put it in the recycle. You're wasting paper. I'm not coming to the Zeus fest. It seems pretty easy.
I mean, you could at least make a house out of it. Or, you know what? If you wanted to do this right, just go. Right? Here's the thing.
It's like, I would not go to the Zeus fest, Mike.
Not the Zeus fest, right? But, like, you know, sometimes it's about making what's important to somebody else important to you. So, like, obviously, if they're just being jerks about it, you know, I'd one up them. I'd show up at one of their services, whatever, right? If I was an atheist, what do I carry the way? They're a bunch of foolish people as far as I'm concerned.
No, and that would probably cause it to go away, actually. Yeah. Just show up once. And here's the deal. If you believe that it's fake, you go to a lot of fake things, movies, I might add. So it seems like no big deal. If you're an atheist because you are upset with God, well, then he's real and you should be there anyway.
You know, that's actually the truth. I've been watching, I picked up on this show called Person of Interest. You ever heard of this? It's got Jim Caviezel in it.
Uh-uh.
So, like, this man gets shot like every other episode, right? And so I'm watching this thing and I'm like, you know, either the news is really selling me a song and dance that these gunshots actually kill people, or the TV is not reliable, you know? So, like, but you imagine on how much, because, like, I'll watch the show, and I'm like, man, I wish I could beat up a room full of mobsters.
Yeah, right.
I feel like that would make my life way easier. Like, I could get myself involved in all kinds of situations if I wasn't worried about being killed or beaten up. And so maybe I will learn to do, you know, SEAL training or whatnot, you know? But the truth of the matter is, like, it's just a TV show, and I'm fooling myself.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm sitting in my living room assuming I'm going to take on this alternative identity of some kind of, you know, tail whooper. It's just, because why? Because I get in these kind of battles all the time. And so, like, imagine the list of things that you've gotten involved in that you believe are phony, that you attend and even put half-hearted effort into, right? What would it take for you just to show up to one of these Sunday services and say, look, boys, I gave it a shot, and, it's not for me.
Yeah. I mean, they could keep doing it, but, like, I don't know, it seems very mild. She says, this is what she'd written. We said, every time any child sneezes, they loudly say, God bless you, and look in my direction. I have complained twice to my principal, one last month and once today. She has spoken privately to one or two of the little cretins, but it seems to do no good. I'm feeling bullied and harassed. It has become intolerable. I don't feel like talking with the parents will stop the inappropriate behaviors because, for all I know, the parents are encouraging them. I see that you didn't even attempt that route.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the worst atheist ever. You know what I'm saying? You're just not good at this.
Yeah, I mean, give it a go.
I would probably, if an atheist guy, a friend of mine, let's just call it a guy I know, and he knows I'm a Jesus man, he's like, I really want you to come to this atheist convention, it'll change your tune. I would definitely go. I would definitely go to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be worried about an atheist thing. I mean, I wouldn't go to the Zeus Fest, but, like,
Well, here's the thing. It's like, you can't go, you could probably even go to the Zeus Fest. You're like, I just can't participate in worship or any of this stuff.
Well, I mean, that's what it is, Mike. It's a worship service.
Yeah, but I'm saying, how are you going to get them out of it? Sometimes you got to get dirty to get people out of the muck.
I don't know. I don't think I have to participate in Zeus Fest for that.
I didn't say participate. I just said merely attend.
Well, what am I going to do? I show up and say, hey, fellas. It's like, all right, now turn to your zymnals.
Yeah.
And I say, I'm out.
Zymnal. Yeah, just say, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that.
I'm going to wait outside eating the you know, the heated cheese or whatever you have here.
Can't you sit there and pray to the one true God while they're saying there's. They're singing out of the zymnal?
I don't know. The three fellas in the Nebuchadnezzar didn't do it. They felt like they had to say no. Like, we're not going to bow down and pray to Jesus instead. Hey, yeah, that's the Sadducees maneuver. No, I don't do that. No.
In fact, every
early Christian that got killed for not, that's what they got killed for, is saying, no, you know what, I'm not going to say, act like I'm worshiping you, but instead kind of worship the Lord.
No, they were asked to renounce or pledge allegiance to Rome. And, like, you're not doing either one of these things at the fictional Zeus Festival. You're not pledging allegiance to Zeus, nor are you denouncing the Lord Jesus Christ. You're showing up with a friend, and then you're going to use it as fodder later for a good discussion.
No, I don't think I have to go to that. I think I can just say no. And anyway, I don't have to go onto the private Facebook group and make a deal out of this.
All right. Well, what about the dudes? What about the dudes from XXX Church that hang out at the porn conventions? Why is that any different?
Yeah, that's a solid point. I don't know. You're not being asked. You're in there to actually try to say your temptation is sin. It's not to worship somebody else. The question is, can you go there and keep from sinning?
Yeah. Why? I mean, I'm not going to accidentally worship Zeus when I'm there.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna have to put a thought on that.
I tell you what, if the Zeus Fest ever rolls through Des Moines, you and I are going to have a comeuppance. I might go.
Infiltrate.
I might be the friend that wants to take you. Zeus Fest. the Simnel.
It was a closed Facebook group, but that makes a little difference. Tucker said, explaining that a group member took and somehow distributed a screenshot. What do you mean, somehow?
Yeah.
It's basic usage of the internet.
Through technological wizardry.
Who writes these articles? Let's see. I don't think it matters, because eventually someone else is going to see it posted, which is what happened. People were reposting. If you said things on there, which she did, about students, no, I don't think it matters, Tucker was quoted as saying. Teachers are encouraged and trained to keep clear boundaries between their personal and professional lives to ensure that the classroom remains a neutral and supportive environment, a statement by the school district reads. This training and related school board policy includes guidelines for interactions on all social media platforms, including, but not limited to, Facebook. We do not condone the use of disparaging comments about our students in any form, on any social media platform, or in any school. Tucker added, our students are protected, and that remarks against students cannot be tolerated. Well, they're not really protected.
I mean,
she can say them.
Put this in a context that doesn't sound so silly, right? Like, what if the kids were, like, making, I don't know, racial slurs at the teacher? Right? That's a legit complaint,
yeah.
Right? And so, like, are they... Da-da-da-da-da-da. Could the affected teacher say, look, you know, the kids are making racial slurs to me, although you'd have to be on a closed racial slur teacher association.
Right.
I don't know. I'm trying to put this in an area where I don't look at it as being quite so silly, but I think it is just kind of silly.
Yeah. Yeah. It said a complaint against Creamer sent by a... Why does her last name have to be Creamer? by a parent of the school states... First and foremost, she should not be discussing her religious preferences or lack thereof with any of these students. Had she not been proudly boasting of her atheism, these children would not know of her personal beliefs, and I would not be addressing this situation. Yeah. Secondly, as an adult in a professional occupation, her choice of words to describe her students is completely unprofessional and completely out of line. I mean, calm down.
I mean, they could be Cretans. You know what I'm saying?
It's a derogatory. There's nothing that you would have accepted, right? Hey, the kids are bullies, the kids are terrible, the kids are stinky. Like, I mean, there's nothing you could have said against your child that you'd have been like, you know, that seems, at least if you're going to say it, you should say it that way. So, I mean, it's not relevant. You don't need 3 points. She shouldn't have been talking about her atheism or to the extent that these kids would know it so that they could harass her with it. The kids shouldn't be otherwise bringing it up all the time. But grow a thicker skin. You're in middle school. I don't care that they're boys. I don't care whether it's girls. It's irrelevant. It's like someone needs to talk to the parents. The parents should otherwise address the behavior, especially if they're Jesus folks. This is not the way to point people to Jesus by harassing them with pamphlets. But secondly, like to the extent that it is within their ability to do those types of things, I mean, you're giving them ammunition. You're fueling the fire. You're certainly not helping your case, and you are kind of the adult here. So, you know, pull it together. Third, the complaint was for her to seek out suggestions from a group on social media of how to handle her students, my children, has me outraged.
Oh, for instance.
No, that's stupid. That seems like a completely normal thing for a teacher to do. Hey, my students are blah, blah, blah. How do I help connect with them differently? How do I teach this matter? Like, I could care less. In fact, I would encourage a teacher to talk with other teachers about how to help my kids.
Yeah, what do you think the break room is?
Yeah,
Just a bunch of teachers going in there and going, man, that one kid is terrible.
Yeah, yeah, dear falsely outraged parent, those final two things are stupid.
Yeah, you don't like it? Teach your kids yourself. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, this pious behavior where I'm like, I can't believe you raise this hellion, you send him to school so he's someone else's problem. He throws the place into disarray, and then you're upset that someone noticed, right? That's outrageous.
Yeah,
right? You should be embarrassed that your kid has been implicated in causing a disruption. Like, if I was atheist teacher, here's what I would say. I would basically take it down to a disruption, right? Like, she's painting this thing as like a personal attack, which it is, fine. You know, but like, say, look, we have a classroom environment, and these are outside disruptions that aren't helping. I need them to stop, right? Whether they're relevant to me or relevant to anybody else in the classroom, the truth of the matter is, you're causing a disruption just to cause a disruption. That's a disciplinary problem. It should be able to handle just like that.
Right. I agree. All right, I think that takes care of that particular problem.
I can't believe that's even. Once again, like we were talking a little bit about this before the show started, but like, Facebook just does this, right? Like when you give people free reign, these are the things people are like, hey, you know, we should all just get along. And like, if I had the opportunity, or if the world had the opportunity, just to kind of do a reset and start over, we would all be able to just meet on common ground or whatever. And you had the perfect opportunity when Facebook showed up, right? It was a clean slate. You had no friends, and you just started to be able to choose people and then like, and discuss what you wanted to discuss, like what you ate or what your kids look like nowadays. And like, give it 10 years and it has turned into a trash receptacle for everything that anybody wanted to spew out of their mouth. Like, you had the perfect opportunity to paint your own picture of exactly who you wanted to be. You get to control your online presence, right?
Right.
And like, people choose to be idiots. And rude and mean and divisive, and like, this is when you had free will to choose whatever you wanted. It blows my mind. You have the complete opportunity. You could be a total snake in the grass and a jerkball, and online you could look like the nicest guy ever. And those are the things that we warn our kids against. Like, be careful, people not be who they seem to be, who they may seem to be online. And that actually does not turn out to be the case. Everyone is like a hyper version of who they are online. They turn into like a ball busting jerk who just like throws nothing but slings and arrows at everybody and says everyone who doesn't agree with me is an idiot. And like, we had a complete opportunity for that social experiment to happen, and it happened, and it proved everything right of people's base nature is to fight with each other. It just is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Mike, someone's mistaken you for the Pope. They're gathering around your place and they say, look, Pope, we ain't leaving until you step out on your pseudo faux balcony and give us some advice or another.
So, I've been thinking about this a little bit the past, I don't know, past couple years. It's like, I always get caught in these ruts where I think, I feel like I'm not following Jesus correctly. Like, I'm not doing it right. It should feel different. You know, or it should have a tinge to it. And Dan always is very quick to pipe up and be like, it's not about what you feel, right? It's about what you're following. And he's right about that to a certain extent, you know? But like, usually you get feelings as a reciprocation of an action or what's been going on, right? And so like, I feel like the stuff that I read in my Bible, I'm like, I just feel like I'm not following Jesus correctly. There has to be more to it. Like, if I can't earn my salvation through Bible reading and prayer, right? And like, and it's not an earned salvation topic, really. Like, obviously, that's a Jesus paid thing. But like, my output should be, you know, if it's not Bible reading all the time and it's not prayer all the time, then what exactly is it? Like, being faithful to God's commandments. Okay. And then I was reading something in Romans today. I think we were in Romans 2, and it was talking about, it was Romans 1. Paul was going through all the lists of things that were considered unrighteous, right? And like, it was like murder and strife and envy and stuff. And then immediately in my head popped in 1 Corinthians 13, when it was talking about what love is. And it says love is patient and love is kind and blah, blah, blah. And I thought both these things, the things that Paul is talking about that is unrighteous, and the things in Corinthians that is talking about all the great things that love is, both of those instances have to do with how you're interacting with other people, right? Like, the unrighteous thing is murdering somebody because you disagreed with them. Envying is wanting something that they have. The strife is when you and someone else disagree. And then on the other hand, when they were talking, when it was talking about love, it's like love is patient to other people. Love is kind to other people. Love does not keep a record of wrongs that other people did, right? And I thought, the Bible does point to some sin that is contained within yourself, especially when it's talking like sexual immorality and that kind of thing, right? But on the whole, God's in the people business. God, that's what He does. His whole kingdom is based on people. He says all these things will pass away and His kingdom will stand, you know? And so like, the material things he can create and get rid of at any time. They're all under his under his purvey. But like his kingdom is made up of people, and so I thought about that a little bit more, and then it occurred to me that like when it says like you to gain your life, you must lose it. Right. And I thought, you lose it to what? To Bible reading and prayer. And that's it. That covers the whole thing. And it really doesn't. Like, all those things are important. The Bible reading is tied into you understanding the God that you're dealing with. And the prayer is you interacting with the God that you've decided to follow and base your life on. Right. But the rest of your life is giving up your life for others. Right. And Jesus even echoes that when he says the greatest thing a guy can do is give up his life for his friends.
Right.
And so, really, a life of following Christ looks like getting to know the God that you're following, interacting with the God that you're following, and dealing with his people. And when you do all those things, I don't know that there's a whole lot of time for you to worry about yourself. And, I mean, thankfully, God's got that kind of covered. He says, look, I'll worry about you. I clothe the lilies of the field. You know what I'm saying? I have you covered. I will provide these things. Your job is to deal with people. And so I think my Pope style advice is like, sometimes we really struggle with what this life following Jesus is supposed to look like. And there's two really great things about that. Is one, it's very unpredictable and really kind of wild and crazy if you're really letting God run the show. I mean, like, his ways are not our ways. Our ways are keep us in security and comfort. And even if it's not wealth, even if we're backing off the wealth train and be like, we don't need the prosperity, God, well, you know, I just need to be okay. And God says, well, that might be on the table. You know, I have stuff, though, and here's the deal. And so, like, the first thing is like, it can be pretty wild and pretty nutty and get you involved in all kinds of stuff. And the second is that, like, most of it has to do with you dealing with people. And so the times over the past couple months where I feel like I don't understand why I have to get involved with, all these situations. I am tired. I am getting worn out. I feel empty, and it's all from dealing with people. And God says, yeah, that's where the joy is, right? That's where the joy comes from. And actually, the truth of the matter is I would be feeling that if I wasn't still fighting so hard for Mike's version of joy to come in. You know what I'm saying? Like, if God says, look, the joy is in you dealing with my people and you getting to know me, following me, and bringing people with you, and that's your whole messy business. It's not necessarily about you, you know, gaining notoriety or becoming great at career or nailing that hobby that you've been working on. All those things are okay, and they're not sinful, right? But like when those things start fighting for places, in the kingdom order instead of where God said all the joy comes from, which is you dealing with my people. That's what you're giving up. That's right. What you're giving your life up for. And so my Pope style advice is like, stop worrying about you. And I know that's tough, right? That sounds ridiculous because you just automatically assume a crazed homeless man that yells the gospel through billboards, right? And that's not what I'm talking about. But God will take care of that, right? Like, he knows you need food. He knows you need clothes. He knows the things that you need, and he will provide them. And so if you're willing to put that much in his hands, you will free up a lot of time to deal with his people, and you will see joy coming out of those interactions and joy out of that life of a completely servant lifestyle that I flat out think that we're not ballsy enough to trust him with, right? Like, we say we'll trust him with a lot of things, but that sounds like it's just going to be nothing but a disaster. So that's my Pope style advice.
No, and I think that's very true. I think the like, we often miss how those two types of things go together. If I'm not to worry about my own basic provisions, within themselves, okay, well then what am I supposed to do with my life, right? It starts from the wrong premise, as if God doesn't have stuff for us to do already. We shouldn't be surprised if he is about the people of his kingdom, and people coming into his kingdom. We can't be surprised that we are also about that as well. And that if he goes to a cross, if he sacrifices himself for those people in the kingdom, we can't be surprised that that's our call as well. And so, you're right. I think we have a shaded view of what it looks like to follow in his footsteps. I think we have a shaded view of what it looks like to actually make disciples and serve the world and speak into a culture. And so I think that's true. And I think a lot of times we try to filter the things that Scripture is talking about through our own lens, as opposed to sharing the way that God sees the world and saying, how is this calling me to do what Jesus has done or be part of the things that Jesus is calling us to do? And I think that is a much bigger calling than where we generally land. It is also a much easier is not the word I want, but it is a it's not a heavy burden, right? Jesus says it.
Well, it's a simple design.
Yeah. It's not
complicated.
No, it's not difficult. It simply says you see a guy, you love a guy, you share good news with a guy, and so right, our lives are a lot less complicated than we make them at times. And frankly, some of the instructions in Scripture are a lot less complicated. It just means real simple things that we don't like. Real simple things that we don't like means I'm not supposed to be focusing on myself and my desire for X, Y, and Z. Well, the truth is that like if I'm spending my time focusing on X, Y, and Z, I'm not actually focusing on person A, B, C that God wants me to be dealing and interacting with. And so those things are a problem, and I'm not also not following through on some of the kingdom work God has me to do. And so as I look at those things, like the simple thing was XYZ was never a problem. I don't have to learn how to do both. Those I'm not supposed to be worrying about them, right? I'm supposed to be looking at person A, person B, person C. And so you're right. Like if we get where we can focus, put our focus away from our own personal stuff, and I mean that much more harshly than what you think it means. But living, it's much more simply directed at how do I serve others the way Christ has served both me and those the world through which he died for. It simplifies a lot of things.
You know, it'd be a real interesting experiment to make that, you know, draw a line in the sand and say, look, I don't know what this looks like, but I'm going to try it in the most radical way for a week.
Yeah.
You know, like I know that the most radical way is not necessarily God's way, right? But like for this week, I'm going to hand it over. And I'm going to run everything through the thought process of not you. It's not you this week. It's everybody else this week. Or it's not you today. It's everybody else today. So whatever your inkling is, and this is not like, hey, don't eat that sandwich. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like don't eat or don't poop or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But like, you know what I'm saying? Like today, it's everybody else today, right? And just give it a shot and just try it and see. It's not that bad, right? It's not what you think it is, and you realize that like you're only having struggle and conflict because you have two kingdoms fighting for each other, right? Like your kingdom is a slow dire, and he makes my kingdom makes things very complicated. Where the simple route is through the narrow door, the complicated route is going around it, and I choose around it because simple. I know what's on the other side of that door, and it's not my kingdom anymore,
right?
Right, and so like it really is that simple of a decision. And the times when we get stressed out and feel like our life is just so hectic and crazy. A lot of it's complication we've put in there because the narrow door, we're not interested, right? And like, I know I've talked to a ton of people, and like, I feel this way. I do this to myself all the time. You'll go weeks at a time and go, I feel like I have not done anything for this kingdom that I claim to be a part of. And the truth of the matter is because I let mine do all the work. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I really got to get person of interest watched. I've started it, you know, and I'm like, I've got to get it done. Because I like this show, and like that's and it's funny because like the time that I sat down to read all the things that I just got done explaining was the time that I decided like I've literally been pushing off my Bible reading at night because I've been watching Person of Interest,
right?
Right, and like today it struck me that like I'm like this. I mean, it's not a legalism thing, you know, where I'm like God's mad because I didn't read my Bible last night, but I thought. I this has to be a waste of my time. I can't imagine that I get to be 85 and think I'm glad I got through Person of Interest. That was awesome, you know. And so like all those things combined, like sometimes I think our life is just way more complicated because that's what it looks like when two kingdoms fight.
Two kingdoms fight.
It's busy and there's maneuvering and there's flanking and there's all kinds of counteraction going on. But like. When it's just one person walking through one door going, I'm glad I don't make any decisions around here.
Right.
I just do what I'm told. I mean, that's simple.
Yeah.
And sometimes people can clamor all they want about you know, all the things that they find wrong with our modern world. But the truth of the matter is everyone seeks back some type of simplicity, not like peeing in a bucket or milking your own cow, you know, but like a certain amount of, I just feel like the day is on top of me and I ain't even gotten out of bed yet.
Right.
And everybody feels that way. And we've, and the worst part is we've created that, right? This is not a culture that creates itself. And you're the one guy outside of it that's yearning for just not feeling so heavy all the time, right? Like, we contributed to this, and we've created this monster, and now you're forced to live in it. And the truth of the matter is like, you're only forced as long as you – it's a forced agreement. You're agreeing to go. You don't have to participate in that. You don't have to be a part of that.
Well, so to hit upon this, there was an article on Relevant Magazine called How Simplifying Your Life Can Be a Problem.
I'm excited to hear this.
So he says, an army of people are urging us through tons of books and blog posts to simplify our lives.
Dang it.
The torrent of advice sounds like, declutter your life, throw away some clothes, buy only what you need, move into a smaller house.
Yeah.
Minimalism is the heading under which most of this takes place. It's been around forever, of course, leading back to the monastic movements, though it should be noted that most minimalists would deny they're after the same thing as those movements. That's fair. But of late, minimalism has found its home on the internet, starting with people like Merlin Mann and more recently the minimalists, Joshua Becker and others. The movement has now broken into mainstream with documentaries like, I don't care. In an age of excess, it's easy to see the appeal of the minimalist message. In the past, I found myself sending loads of stuff to Goodwill, deleting old files, and feeling better in the process. Yeah, I do always feel like I've minimized my life when I've deleted some files.
Yeah, off the desktop.
Put those zeros and ones elsewhere until they are written over. But as anyone who's ever undertaken this stuff knows that feeling doesn't last for long. Eventually, we have to ask ourselves, what are we simplifying for?
Mm-hmm.
According to what's out there on minimalism, the answer is usually so you can live a more meaningful life. That's a great bite-sized answer that makes us feel warm and cozy. But does less stuff really define a meaningful life? When you push past the catchphrase, you find that what's being promoted is a more meaningful life defined by making yourself happy. Oh. A life defined by being freed up to do what you love, live where you want, and be who you want without the definition your stuff gives you. So, Mike, that's different, though, I suppose, than what it is that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I guess I would agree with all the things that he's saying, right? But like, it just so happens that like you cut a lot of the riffraff out, so you can serve who you want. You know what I'm saying? So you can follow where you need to follow, and so you can obey where you need to obey without all that other stuff in the way.
Yeah, right. The wants are just different.
Yeah.
Like, this frees up the things that are tying you from doing the things that you want. Assuming that you want to do what Jesus wants you to do, which is to go serve people.
You know, and I'm sure everyone has had this realization, right? Like you sit at work and all of a sudden one day, somewhere in the mid-afternoon, you're like, why do I even come here? I don't like it here. Or is this whole life that I've agreed to, all the things that I'm geared up about, especially when a new company policy will come down and everyone's all fired up about it and everyone's, you know, I can't believe this, and blah, 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 management, blah, blah, blah. And you sit back just two steps away from the conference table and go, boy, I can't imagine that I care that much about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, this just seems like an outrageous thing to get all fired up about. In the grand scheme of things, this is a very small – it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I've agreed to come to a place for at least 8 hours a day and get riled up about things that don't matter. This is my life. This is what I do. Right? You can't tell me that, like, everybody's job is like that at some point.
Right.
And you're like, what have I done here? And, like, the fact that you even have that thought process leads it to be a common factor where you can be like, am I involved in the things I want to be involved in? That's not whether you're – that's not a self-empowered happiness thing. That's just a, am I wasting – am I stewarding the gift I've been given well?
Right. Am I caught up in something, or have I intentionally – am I living intentionally? Am I doing the things that I intend to do? Or have somehow I've got on some kind of conveyor belt of which I'm traveling along and I don't particularly want to be here and simply haven't chosen to get off.
Right. They changed the company logo. Oh, it's just, I hate it. It's stupid. It doesn't look like the old logo. Like, you've just wasted, 3 minutes of anger on something that does not matter.
Right.
Right? You're on the conveyor, friend. You know, and I don't know that I'm necessarily speaking against investing yourself in your work, but I guess what I'm saying is like, when you start filling your life with so many little things that you are putting time and energy into, and all of a sudden you look and go, you spent no time and no energy on anything that you actually wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, right. Like, we're not agreeing to the capital of our choices. Like, we're we're not coming to a realization that says that these things cost things. Time is a precious commodity. Money is a limited commodity. And even the effort is not an unlimited commodity. And so I can say, hey, I really wish I could help people. Well, you have X amount of time in your life or in a day or in whatever. This is how you're spending it. If you're not helping people with that time, it is simply because you're choosing to do other things with it.
That's right. You have the high score on Ruzzle. So,
you're right.
I mean, you've made your choice, friend, right? You chose to be awesome at Ruzzle. You chose not to help a guy. And, like, this is another thing we were talking about just before the show started, is, like, people will come out of their mouth and say, I understand this to be true, and I've always wanted to help people more. That's not true, because if you did, that's what you'd be doing.
Yes.
Right? Just like when I say, I'm hungry, and you know how I know I'm hungry? Because you'll find me getting something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? My actions always directly follow what I really want to do. And so, like, if the truth of the matter was that I wanted to help people more, that's what I would be doing. And I would not have, I would probably not have enough time to beat a high-scoring guy on the Ruzzle. Now, don't hear me wrong on this. You can help people and still be awesome at Ruzzle.
Sure.
Right? This is not a sin. We're not talking about choosing one or the other. But, like, don't stand there on your podium and act like you got great plans for your life when you are literally pissing yours down the toilet doing nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because if you really wanted to do that, that's what you would be doing.
No, yeah, yeah. Like that's, what is it? I can't remember where I was reading it on the internet somewhere, but, like, it was like an emphasizing that everybody that you think is fantastic, right? People who are very productive, people that have been very successful in life, are dealing with the same number of hours in the day that you are. Right, they don't get extra because they rock at life.
Right,
you don't get five free because you helped 10 people today. It cost them something. It cost them time away from their family, or it cost them not being able to work a job that allows them to buy XYZ. Right, like there's simply a cost to it, and you need to. Are you taking a step back and how are you allocating your life? How are you allocating the treasures of which you were to steward? And so, like, I don't care about minimalism as an aesthetic. The question is that, like, are you, What is taking up your time and money? How are you spending the capital of which the Lord has given you? And if you're looking and say, if my gig is to help people and not worry so much about myself, and I look at how I spend my time and money, and I think that's not balanced right. I spend most of my time worrying about myself. I spend most of my time getting working to know whether I'm hungry. Like, the last time has it ever occurred to me at around 11:45 or so, I think, hey, I'm hungry. I should get something to eat. Do I spend any time thinking, you know who else is hungry? Probably somebody within this 3-block radius who doesn't have a house.
Right.
You know, no, I don't really do that. I don't really spend my time and saying, you know, before I'm going to get myself something to eat, maybe I should go check and see if there's another dude out there who could use a sandwich. And maybe I'll go find him, and then me and him will get something to eat. That isn't generally what I'll do. What I will do is I'll be like, I'm hungry. I'm going to walk or drive to go get something to eat. And if I happen upon a guy on the way, maybe I'll pick him up. But, like, I don't really put another dude in the forefront of my thoughts and say, I'm going to see if he's hungry first.
Yeah.
And then we'll work with him. And if it takes me an hour and maybe I don't have time to eat anymore because I was looking for a dude, that's what I'm willing to accept about going to find someone else who's hungry. And so, like, does that need to be your every? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it doesn't. I don't care. But the point is that, like, you have things that are you focused or other people focused, and that goes with how you spend your time, money, effort, stewardship, whatever. And, until you accept the responsibility for your own control over that time, over that money, over that effort, you're being dishonest. And frankly, a lot of the move for some people, not from an aesthetic standpoint, but simply says, look, I'm becoming minimalist because I'm frankly just not thinking as much about myself. I'm getting rid of the things that otherwise point me and take away my resources that I want to spend elsewhere.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, do you need and of course, I mean, I contribute this with my own children, right? But, like, do you need 5 avenues for entertainment?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, do you need a tablet, a computer, and a gaming system? Do you need all 3 of those things? Because you could be entertained by one of them. And
right.
So that's not a minimalist approach, right? That's just stewarding your time and money well.
Yeah.
Like, do I need 3 distractions and then I got to pay attention to all 3 distractions, right? And boy, the apps on your phone have really contributed to this, right? Like, I have 20 distractions on my phone that keep me from actually doing something, you know? And so, like, there's any number of red badges with numbers on them that pop up and be like, pay attention to me.
Right.
Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. All things that, like, if you'd have walked up to me as another human and said, hey, the North Korean government decided they're going to repaint all the chairs purple, And I'll read that on my phone, but if you showed up as another dude and told me that, I'd be like, I don't care.
Right.
Right? I care because my phone told me, but I don't care if someone else, you know, delivered it to me.
Right. Stop telling the story.
That's right. So, I'm interested to hear that. Is there parts of that article where he starts listing things?
Let's see. Let's follow him through. He says, my intention is not to denigrate some of the actions that are promoted by the minimalists and those advocating a simpler lifestyle. I actually find much of that advice helpful in my own life. Well, crap. But the ideology behind those actions...
The headline was misleading.
Yeah, exactly. But the ideology behind those actions is not enough to help us live a meaningful life, no matter how many closets we clean. Okay. The problem with having money or few... Excuse me, with having many or few possessions is that we're trying to find meaning where there is none. At one extreme, we're trying to define ourselves by our iPhones, cars, and homes. In another, we're trying to define ourselves by our own contentment. But neither is sufficient to ground us in a world of refugee crisis, cancer, and human trafficking. Yeah, okay.
So, actually, I was convicted of this by a friend of ours who, Ben and I both actually have a knack of getting very cool things for free.
Yeah.
Like, we find them on the side of the road, or, like, we heard a guy was going to get rid of it, and we're like, we'll drive down there and pick it up. And so, like, any cool thing in my house, I've not paid for, right?
Right.
And, like, I thought this is godly value, right? Like, I'm not spending all my wealth or what I have of wealth on material possessions, right?
Yeah.
And, like, it was Herrick. And Herrick goes, well, here's the thing, Mike, is, like, you're not worshiping money. That's true, right? You're worshiping your ability to get cool things for free. So you still are worshiping something else, right? Your worship is still headed in the right direction, because it does take my time,
right?
And it does take my effort, and it does take my scheming. You know, like, it takes time and effort away from other things. And once again, like, the work itself is not sinful to, like, get a free TV from a guy, you
sure.
know? But, like, I mean, I take a day off work to go looking through garbage in a town because it's junk day at that town and people are throwing away cool stuff.
Yeah.
All that's not inherently simple, right? But, like, when you walk into my house and I'm like, that's the first thing I want to tell you. But, like, see that? I got it for free.
Right. I didn't pay for that stuff.
See that thing? Free of charge. You know what I'm saying? Like, then it starts to turn into something that's not as healthy, you
right.
know? And so, like, it's not that it has to be – once again, it's not like it's a sinful practice, right? But, like – You have added a layer of a complicated, right? My kingdom of, hey, I want to be known as the guy that gets cool stuff for free is now starting to infringe on, you know, the kingdom of God that's trying to do actual work with actual people and make actual difference.
Yeah. Yeah. He continues. He says, if your meaning in life depends on your circumstances, you need to realize that your circumstances will change. If your meaning in life can be taken away by a cancer diagnosis, the loss of a loved one, or your candidate losing an election, then it's not enough. You can find meaning in your possessions, but one day they'll be taken from you. You can find meaning in your beauty, but one day you'll lose it. You can find meaning in your happiness, but one day you'll be sad. Our struggle is less about deciding how much or how little stuff we have, and more about where we find our meaning in life. There are myriad suggested solutions to that problem, but the Christian worldview has a distinct way of solving it. Christianity has a lot to say about possessions and where to find meaning. At the root of the Christian worldview is the idea that God himself came to earth in the form of the man Jesus, and that man died for the sins of humanity. But he was resurrected after 3 days. Moving on. The book opens, after all, with, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. When writing in the original Greek, John used a word that was absolutely loaded in that day. The word is logos. Logos didn't simply mean word. The term was coined by Heraclitus long before John was writing, and he defined as being the divine reason or plan which coordinates a changing universe. Logos meant the reason for something, in this case, the reason for life. In Greek culture, the logos was where meaning and reason were derived from, and the whole universe was tied together by that logos. This does not apply, blah, 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 blah. The whole point is that the Christian worldview has the ability to provide us meaning in life that can't be taken away, Jesus. We want to live a life that isn't defined by things we know won't last, and we want to positively impact the world around us. But we won't find those things by looking to either our stuff or our lack of it. Yeah, okay. I mean, that was a really long road just to say, look, the point or the benefit from a minimalist perspective of not having stuff isn't simply the virtue that you have less stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a duh. Like, most people who are trying to get rid of it are to say, because I want to travel more, because I want to be in closer confines with my family and not have to worry about, you know, these three things that come along with big house ownership or, you know, having to pay these property taxes or whatever it is. they're trading those things away to focus on the things that they believe have value. I mean, he could have done this a lot simpler. The question is do those things that you are trading it for actually have value? Well, if you're using it to help others, serve the kingdom of Jesus, and otherwise get your identity from a life that does that, then yeah, absolutely, it has value. But you could also do that without having traded all your crap away, as long as you're not serving it. But like, can I do that more? Can I be more successful? Does it get rid of most of the barriers or implicit blindness that comes along with my life if I start getting rid of the things that serve me so that I may serve others? Yeah, that completely sniffs right.
Yeah.
So I suppose the easy things, if you're going to trade something away for something that has more value, make sure it actually has value to it.
Well, and here's the thing is like, God's a pretty big God, right? So like, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're looking at it like you have a larger than normal house, you know, and God's frowning on you because you're serving the house. The truth of the matter is you can't have people stay at your place if you live in a boot.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't be generous to other folks if you don't have a place for them to live. And so, like, that's not a good reason to buy a mansion, but you know, you can look. I know for a fact, like, some friends of ours bought a house with a spare room in it that they're not going to use purposely so they could have a guest room for people to stay in or people to Sabbath in or people to just vacation in and get away from their stuff and have a place to refresh and unwind and start over. And I wish more of us would do that, right? And plans in mind that, like, we have plans to be generous here. And if it is in with your, if God has blessed you with the means to get it done, then yet plan ahead to be generous to other people. Because once again, we're in the people business. And so if you're taking that money to buy a bigger house, you know, so you can serve people with it, that's not a bad thing.
Right. Right?
That's not something to be frowned on, you know. But during that same example, though, like, When these dudes start tearing apart the roof to drop in a paralytic man in Jesus's while Jesus is talking, you didn't hear Jesus say, "Come on, fellas, the roof, come on."
Right.
You know, this is outrageous. He's just like, "I got it." Right. It boils down to the people. He made no mention that the roof was torn up. I read that story and I'm like, "Who fixed the roof? Whose house is this? Where's the guy that saw it all to get his roof torn apart? Was he mad at Jesus?" You know what I'm saying? Like, all the stuff that, like, Jesus is like, "The dude. Let's talk to the dude."
Yep.
And so, like, all that points to a right living. Like, Jesus could not be talking to those people in a house that didn't exist. And so the house was there to serve its purpose. But when the house got damaged to help people, Jesus says, "Great, the person. That's the person I'm worried about."
Right, right. Exactly. All right. All right. So, you know, here's the deal. All that, the minimalist lifestyle stuff distracts from the broad point, which is that if a lot of the stuff that Scripture's pointing to, and even the fruits of the Spirit are things of which are revealed in our interactions with other people. We need to be reminded that the entirety of God's kingdom is made up. Like, when everything else passes away, you're talking about God and souls, God and people. And like, that is whom He came to serve. That is who we are called to serve. And a lot of things that stand in the barrier, that are barriers to us serving others, are almost exclusively because we are serving ourselves. And as people who are to otherwise die to ourselves, follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, who sacrificed Himself, came down from the from heaven to the lowly creation, and to do these types of things, we may need to relook at our life.
Agreed.
All right, Mike, you got over there. You got any any dear life from the path? We got time for like one or two.
Okay, here we go. Where is it at here? Dear life from the path. My daughter-in-law is extremely jealous of the close relationship I have with my daughter. If I spend time with my daughter and grandson, she gets mad at me and keeps my grandchildren from me. I need advice on how to handle her. I get her children almost every weekend. I work a full-time job, but she feels like I should have them more.
What?
What is going on here?
I'm having trouble following.
My daughter-in-law, so this is her son's wife.
Yep.
Is extremely jealous of the close relationship I have with my daughter.
Okay, doesn't make any sense so far. Go ahead.
If I spend time with my daughter and grandson, she gets mad at me and keeps my grandchildren from me. I need advice on how to handle her. I get her children almost every weekend. I work a full-time job, but she feels like I should have them more.
I feel like you should have them more, but if you don't have them as often as I want, I keep them from you.
Boy, I haven't having the foggiest of what's going on here.
Yeah, you need to talk to your son.
I mean, about what, though? Like, I can't even fish out what she's exactly mad at.
Well,
here's what this letter sounds like. I don't like my daughter-in-law. Love, Grandma.
Or is it the opposite? Is it the that the daughter-in-law doesn't like her?
I work a full... No, here's the thing. There's a bunch of defensive statements here. And people who are not wrong don't make defensive statements. I work a full-time job. That's a defense statement.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... Right, it's not relevant to say how often you work. The question is like... is the assumption that we would come back and say, hey, you should take the kids more. Aren't you free?
Who would say that? I don't know.
Maybe that's the implication from the daughter-in-law. So she's defending herself against the daughter-in-law.
I mean, yeah. I mean, here's what you do have to be afraid of, right? The truth of the matter is like, as your adult children grow older, the boy is going to tend to distance himself from his mom more than the girl, right? It's just the way they work. If your family was a decent family unit growing up, the mom and the daughter still stay tight. The boy child tends to start just gravitating away a little bit, right? And so just because of that, his wife is going to be slightly more removed than your daughter. And so, like, if that is the appearance that she's getting, is not only is that true, but you're also feeding into that, that's something you can do something about, right? Like, it's not so far off the scale to say, am I actually perpetuating this in some way? Because it's possible you are and you're not meaning to.
Right. Right?
Or she's just a jealous, crazy woman, you know, who's reading something that's not there and, you know, wants more attention than is reasonable. And, like, you know, you can deal with that in whatever way you can, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a gray issue. If the truth of the matter is that you want to spend more time with your grandchild than you're currently, you know, you're going to have to bend a little bit. And you're going to be right in principle, but you're going to deal with people. And so you're going to try to figure out how to get this in the middle somewhere.
Yep.
Secular says,
okay,
I don't think your daughter-in-law is necessarily jealous of the close relationship you have with your daughter, but it may be that she wants more free babysitting service. You say you have her children almost every weekend? That hardly seems to me like she's keeping them from you. That's true.
Oh, right, yeah.
Remind her that working a full-time job and taking care of her children the amount of time you already do is as much as you can handle, and that you need time with your daughter and her son. There are only so many hours in a day, and you need time to rest if you're going to go to the distance. If that's not enough for her, so be it. If she chooses to punish you for it, it is her children who will also suffer, not just you.
Hmm. Okay. Huh. Yep.
Okay.
One more.
Another teacher. Dear Life from the Path, I live in a small town in Pennsylvania where I teach fifth grade and coach at the local school. I love my job and feel lucky to be teaching next door to my mentor. The problem is there's another teacher and a student with whom I share the same name. I can't help but feel discouraged when colleagues and students refer to me as Junior So-and-so or Fake So-and-so and make jokes about it on a daily basis. I try to laugh it off, but it does get to me. I feel I should be respected because I'm a professional. Dang, almost had it. Is there a better way to handle this so it doesn't negatively affect my day? Dear Fake Paul.
I didn't see that coming.
Listen, you don't own the name Paul. You can't be offended when other people have the name Paul and other people notice it and call you Paul Jr. or Fake Paul. Right? I mean, the problem is if there was another Mike where I worked and they called me Mike the Lowly or Mike the Second, would I take that as personal offense? Right? Mike the Lowly, maybe. But Mike the Second, it just means there was another Paul there already. Just like if they called me Paul Jr. and that guy Paul Sr., I'm assuming he was there before me. So Paul Jr.'s not that bad.
Right.
You know, people think they're funny. You got to give them a little room. They're not funny, but that doesn't mean they don't think they are. And they're just trying to make funny jokes. Stop letting it eat you alive.
I mean, I suppose, yeah, you only have a couple options here. Either you put up with it or you suggest a different name. But like, hey, call me Donnie. You know, like what? Like, if you don't give them a name to use, they're going to pick one on their own. That's how people work.
Yeah.
So, if you want to reinforce, be like, I'm Donnie now.
Yeah.
Like, fine. Go ahead and do that.
I mean, stick a sir in front of your name. Like, I'm Sir Paul. You know what I'm saying? Like, take a surname that is kind of uptown and stately.
Yeah.
And that way you're not at the behest of the other guys. And if the other guy's a teacher, say, look, you know, casually start referring to me as Sir Paul. And act like it's a joke between us. And then everyone will think they're in on the joke, and everybody will call you Sir Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. I don't understand this. People have ceased to start being clever. Like, they just gave up. Like, they, our world's become a I don't know, the world's not right, but certainly country. We're just a group full of people who have entirely decided that the only way to move needles is propaganda. Here's the deal. Look at any war within the last century, last 100 years, and every reasonable government knew that if you're going to win a war, you need to win on two fronts. You need to win a physical battle, and you need to win the propaganda war, right? Your ability to win physically allows your ideas then to permeate, and you might need those ideas to keep people fighting physically. They went hand in hand. We become a group that only – that deplores action. And so we look at this and we say, look, things only improve on my ability to propagandize. And so was it here on the show that we were talking about? I said, like, if you're concerned about how people of certain groups are treated, especially when it comes to economically in the future of our country, you're like, hey, you know what? They're going to pass all these laws and it's going to benefit middle-class America. And I say, great. Welcome, middle-class person who's afraid of that. As these tax cuts perhaps show up and you think that are unfairly being directed to you and not others, make sure you write down, keep track of how many of those taxes that you are now paying less of, and make sure you're giving away to someone.
Yeah.
There's a practical way to solve this problem, all right? You think people are being treated unfair and that you're getting a greater benefit than someone else, then keep track of it and pay it out.
Yeah.
Seems perfectly fine to me. And so, like, your war of ideas is fantastic. Go ahead and keep that up. But, like, that's not going to solve your problem. It simply isn't. Like, figure out the best way to live in the situation that you're in while trying to change it. But if you put all your effort into changing the situation and you put no effort into living creatively within your circumstance. And so this person, I mean, you can stomp for a while and you can get upset and you can say, look, don't call me Bill or whatever the problem is. Or you can just come up with a better name that you think will work out and, you know, put that around and go by that. Figure out how to own your situation, because you can't change, just like that goofball atheist teacher, like, you can't change the people within their rights are doing things that you don't approve of. Just you probably shouldn't be talking to kids about your atheism, but you know what? I actually am less concerned about that. If that's what you believe, I don't know what I care.
Yeah.
I don't rely on you to teach my kid those types of things anyway. And they got to learn to live in a world where all people believe alternate things. In fact, as a Christian, if you're not prepared for people that don't love Jesus, you don't understand your work, friend. And so, you can't flip out and just, you know, start programming somebody and dropping flyers on them all the time just because you can't handle the fact that someone else doesn't love Jesus. Welcome to life. And so here's the thing. Like, Christians are actually pretty good at this, the right ones. They look at their situation and said, hey, this situation sucks. Christianity traditionally is not a movement with power. And so we say, how do we live in a place where we do not have power and try to influence for the positive growth of the kingdom for all ages? And that's when Christianity is actually firing all cylinders, man.
Yeah.
Like, we try to propaganda something, but really we're doing something. How do we live in this environment? Well, we hide in underground churches and we pray and we sing, and then when cops come, we hope the Spirit gives a heads up and we split. And then we figure out somewhere else to do it. And we paint the Nasrani thing on people's things. So, like, that's the wrong example, actually. That was happening more of a Target situation. But, like, the broad point is that, like, there are practical ways to live in oppressive environments. And so, by all means, use your words. But, like, I mean, do something. Live creatively in your circumstances and figure out how to make the best of them while you're actually in them. And that goes for modern political discourse. It goes for Christianity across the board. Just kind of pout and stomp on your feet ain't actually changed anything. Your job is actually win the thing. It's to have it come out right, not just, you know, stamp around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, this letter could have been simplified as, Dear Life from the Path, my name is Bill. People call me Fake Bill. Crap. Love Bill.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. My situation is not how I would prefer it. I say, well, try to convince them to call you Bill. If they don't want to call you Bill, come up with a cooler name, see if they'll go with that.
Right.
If they none of the above, figure out how to enjoy Fake Bill.
Yeah, it's not that bad, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, okay, Secular says, the people who do this may think they're hilariously funny, but when students do it, it is disrespectful. Tell them you would prefer to be addressed as Mr., first initial of your last name. You're an idiot. Don't do that. People will trash you for that kind of stuff.
Hey, call me Mr. B.
Yeah. You know what? I had a guy do that to me the other day. I introduced him by his first name, and he told me that his name is Mr., whatever his last name was, and he was to be addressed as such. And I thought, you pompous jerk. And I will never call him by that, only because he represented himself as such a higher up to me that it irritated me. And so, like, if you think that that tactic is going to work on a bunch of middle school students, you're foolish.
No. I mean, I'd like to say that. I mean, here's the deal. I would hope the parents are teaching the kids to address you correctly, but like, they're obviously not.
No.
And so, you know, you ain't going to start the respect train here. Figure out a way to make a connection with them. Then you can have the right influence and teach them the right things. And you want to tell them, call you Mr. B 3 months from now. Maybe they'll do it.
Maybe not.
Well, maybe, hey, here's the deal. Hey, they might. Here's the deal. You get to know some folks, and you let them call a fake Bill for a while. You make some friends with some people, and you say, hey, look, you know, I actually would prefer Mr. B. You think you guys can get on with that? I mean, maybe they're like, no, we like fake Bill. I was like, all right, that's cool.
If people started calling me fake Mike, I think I'd be kind of digging on it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, everybody would know who you are. They're like, that's fake Mike. Remember that teacher we had in school, fake Mike?
No, right. That's distinct.
Yeah.
You'll remember that guy.
You're shying the thing off for no reason.
I think that's the way to do it.
It says, as for your colleagues, remind them that you are an adult now. Nothing about you is fake. And give yourself a nickname with more acceptable than junior. Do it with humor. If they slip up, keep reminding them, and eventually it will catch on. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, just handle your situation.
Yeah, fake Mike. I love it.
You've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. We really do appreciate it. If you love or hate the show, we'd love to know about that. Shoot us an email at info@livefromthepath.org.
You're still sending all hate mail to Roloff.
.org. Yeah, and I forgot what the address is. I think it's C-Roloff. C-R-O-H-L-O-F-F at WTRU.com.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway, go ahead and, say if you really hate the show, I'm sure he'd like to know.
Yeah.
I tried to see if he'd come on, and I said he's not out that late. He don't stay out that late.
He old.
I mean, I'm with him. Solidarity.
He's a fake roll-off.
He's a fake roll-off. All right, thanks for hanging out with us. We will see you next week. In the meantime, please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.